The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, July the 12th, 2025.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 88, The Unknown X. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore. What up?
Sup? Hey, you said right in the right place, and it's not in the script. So hey,
I know. I'm gonna
you,
fix
you
that
remembered again. That time. Yeah. Cool beans.
Fix it again.
Excited back talking about some Golden Age Superman. Kind of missed it there over the past little bit with talking about other things and not talking about other things for a little bit. So it's been fun kind of getting back into it. And I'm kind of saddened, although that's kind of a harsh word, but our trip into the Golden Age will be just a shorter trip this time before we get back into recording more about the more contemporary Superman. So I'm like, excited, get into it. And then it's like, no, switch up.
Because I'm, you know, this is episode 88. It's going to be episode number 4 of season 8. So it's the 4th of 6 Golden Age stories we'll tell in season 8. And I'm like, just having a ball being right in the middle of these. And I'm, you know, having fun reading them and talking about them. And at the same time, it's like I'm also looking forward to getting back to doing some post-crisis Superman, and I'm sure that halfway through that, I'll be like, ah, let's get back to the Golden Age, you know? And so, yeah. But today, we're looking at The Unknown X. This is the Superman story that appears in World's Finest Comics number 2. Now, wasn't the first issue called World's Best
Comics? Didn't it tell us that on the cover? Formerly World's Best Comics, it says.
Okay.
So, yes, it was. The first issue was World's Best, and now it is called World's Finest, and I think, if I recall, it'll be called World's Finest for the next, 150, 175 issues. So, they liked World's Finest better than World's Best.
Yeah. There's the cover.
Superman, Zatara, Batman, and Robin, red, white, and blue.
Whoa!
I don't know who they are. I just have the Superman story, so I know Zatara. I know who that is, and of course Batman and Robin. I don't know red, white, and blue. I don't know if those are characters or if this is some allusion to the 4th of July, or I don't know what's going on.
I have the place thing pulled up here on, let's see. I don't know if they have, they don't have the red, white, and blue. Story spelled out on Mike's Amazing World. So, yeah, can't look it up. So the Superman story in this issue, Unknown X, was written by Jerry Siegel. The penciler is Paul Cassidy. And we have an inker listed, Leo Novak. World's Finest Comics number 2 has a cover date of summer 1941. So according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it probably sold on, my show notes say Maisie 16th, but it's May 16th, 1941. Maisie. And let me tell you what happened in the story. Metropolis is gripped by a crime wave under the direction of the Unknown X, a mysterious gang leader. Superman apprehends several members of the gang, but he is unable to make them talk. He is finally able to get a lead on the gang boss when he allows one of the crooks to escape. The crook makes a call to Arthur Jameson, head of a citizens committee put together to fight the crooks. Superman begins investigating Jameson as Clark Kent. Jameson claims that he is trying to infiltrate the gang to learn the identity of the Unknown X. Later, he receives a threat and tries to leave town, suggesting that Clark do the same. Superman follows Jameson and proves that he is really the gang boss. Jameson holds millionaire Russell Walker hostage, but his plan fails to stop Superman, who brings the crime boss to justice. Ed, what'd you think?
I liked the previous story a little bit better. Although I do have to acknowledge that this story, they seem to be playing on the rise of fascism or the rise of Nazism in Germany at this time, probably as heavily as any story that they've used at this point. And here in a moment when we get into the story, I'll explain why I think that. But first, the narrator tells us, a new mastermind of crime, the Unknown X, victimizes Metropolis with the most thorough organization of criminals the city has yet seen. Crimes are pulled at great rapidity, but thugs wearing a distinctive armband. When the police fail to achieve results, a citizens' committee is formed to combat the menace. But Metropolis's only real hope lies in the intervention of its great champion of justice, the amazing Superman.
Rapidity.
That's a good word. You don't see that used very often.
Yeah.
And so the armband that they wear is what definitely puts me in mind of, and I didn't look to see who wore them in Germany at this time that the story came out. I don't know if it was a symbol of fascism or if it was the true Nazi party that was wearing the armbands, but I presume it's so that you could walk around in your regular suit. But then when you go to meetings or whatever, you could be recognized because the armband was a separate.
Yeah.
Like, I think before this, you saw men doing it at funeraries. They would wear black armbands to show sorrow. And somehow, yeah. So I guess wearing an armband to signify different things must have been something that was done at this time in history around the world. You could dress however you wanted to. And then you would just put on the armband that would signify whatever it was you wanted to signify. You wouldn't have to have it sewn onto your clothes and worn all the time or whatever. So when I saw the armbands, I immediately thought of, you know, historical photographs and video that I have seen of, I presume them to be Nazi party meetings, but it could just be the fascist aspect of the German government at the time. But probably it was Nazis. So that is definitely what they're playing on here is these guys are Nazis, but they don't, and I don't know why, but they don't say that.
No, it was like it's like in the episode or the story with the Ducalia spy ring, the sports contest with the nation of, they were obviously supposed to be Nazis and, you know, DC just doesn't, they tend not to use real locations.
Well, at this time,
I guess, yeah, Adam.
But later, when we do retcon stories, and what comes to mind is All-Star Squadron, the Japanese are referred to as Japs all the time in there. But that was in the 1980s. That wasn't in the 1940s. So maybe that distance of time allows us to be a little bit more condescending and get away with it by using, you know, various epithets and what have you. But at the time, they're like, yeah, I don't know why you in the middle of it. I don't know why you would be afraid to use these epithets that are acceptable or are used later. It's like, well, if they're okay to use later, why wouldn't they have been okay to use at the time?
Well, and that's the thing, because we, like I said, we talked about this a bit during that Ducalia aspiring episode, because I'm just as confused as you why they don't just come out and say Nazis. And the thing I think that makes me the most confused is, you know, our thinking is that why are they afraid? Was it a social thing?
Why
was
not bring that up? I mean, I'm sure.
Well, but at the same time, Captain America number one is on the stands and it's got Captain America punching Hitler in the mouth. So Marvel wasn't afraid.
Did I don't know. I mean, so I would think that at this time, you know, there are Jewish creators, there are Jewish men in charge. Why in the world are you not saying, oh, look at these Nazis, they suck. Nazis suck, you know, it's like, but that's not, they're hesitant to do that. Now, I will say at this point, the U.S. still has not officially joined World War II. So perhaps that has something to do with it. I don't know.
At this point, the show experienced a long, uncomfortable silence that seemed to go on forever. Thankfully, I'm able to skip all that and take you back into the episode. You're welcome.
Trying to find an audiobook that I have. I don't know if I kept it.
Okay. I'll go into the story here a little bit.
Let me say real quick, because the armbands that they wear, once you put it into that perspective, you know, I'm now thinking of you know, Germans in suits with their fedoras and they've got the Nazi armband on. I've just always assumed that those were Nazi party members who were not members of the military. So rather than wearing like a Nazi uniform, they would put the armbands on. But when I was reading this, I didn't put that connection together at all. All I could think of was the X-Men.
Okay. That's kind of a stretch there, but yeah. I like your...
Well, because they got a circle
your
with
military
an
and your
late
person. I could see, yeah. Because it's not a uniform. And maybe that was just it. Maybe it was only officially part of a uniform. Otherwise, it had to be something that was removable. And so that's why you had the armbands.
Okay, I think, yeah. So I've got this... I haven't started listening to it yet, but it's a book by Danny Fingeroff. And it's called Disguised as Clark Kent, Jews, Comics, and the Creation of the Superhero.
Okay. There certainly in the 30s and 40s, a lot of superheroes created by a lot of Jewish creators. That was a... Yep. And to me, I don't know why necessarily, but that always has struck me as a very interesting element of a lot of the American comic book creations is that a lot of them were done by Jewish men. There were more artists in the U.S. at this time than just Jewish men, you know, but it seems to be they that moved into the superheroes and started doing the superhero stuff first. So, yeah.
Yeah, I got to listen to that book. I'm sure they
probably
talk about
I would
that.
Hope so, because it's a glaring kind of thing. You know, it's not. It's one thing to say that, you know, all these heroes were created by middle-aged white men, which is true, but it's even a subset of middle-aged white men is that a large number of them were Jewish. So it's like, well, why? I don't know. I've never really dug into it, but it's always been something that has stuck out to me that I've been curious about. Not only that, but if you think about it, a lot of the longer-lived superheroes were those created by Jewish men. Why is that? Does that have to do with anything? Or is that just a happenstance or coincidence? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. All right, so we open at the Daily Planet with Lois and Perry. Perry? Is he Perry Whitehead? Talking.
Yep.
Perry says, the unknown X must be stopped before he blackens the name of this city beyond all repair. And Lois retorts, and I know someone for that job, Superman. And Clark is sitting here. We see him off to the side a little bit. So, of course, the next scene is Superman.
So first panel of the actual story and two of the three biggest figures of the Daily Planet are together, and two of them are talking about this crime thing that something needs to happen. And just within that panel, it's been decided that the Daily Planet's not going to do anything about it. We'll leave it to Superman.
Well, yeah, that's true. They spent so much time in Action Comics that would have come out about the same time in taking the lead. You know, they're like, well, we're going to step back and let somebody else do it. Superman's a good one, but let him do it.
Yeah.
And the next panel, we see Superman trying to subdue a bunch of thugs in a car driving away, firing pistols with the one of them. And you can presume all of them have, but we see one definitely has the armband of Unknown X. Superman tells us, in case we couldn't put that together, Hirelings of the Unknown X, here's where the mysterious characters and I come to grips. So he's getting ready to stop them, plops down on the car, rips the roof off, throws one guy through the hole in the roof while he's grabbing the other. By the time he extracts the second one up outside, he catches both of them in very uncomfortable-looking ways here in this panel and flies off with them. Although, it's in the way that he is drawn in this panel, I could argue that he's not flying, that he has leapt because of the way he looks. But
yeah, there's a moment later that it's obvious that the artist was like, oh, he can fly now? Yeah, all right, then.
So, so he takes the gentleman and, takes him to a police station, I guess. But what's all the smoke in that panel?
I don't know. That confused the hell out of me. I assumed that they were hovering in the clouds.
And it looks to me like what he would do is take them up there like he did in the story in action, take them up, threaten to drop them to get information from them. But,
well, because he does that later in the story. I thought this was the same scene, but it's not. Yeah, that.
Maybe confusion by the artist. Maybe the artist had read farther into the story. And then was drawing this, and it's like he intended it that, and yeah.
I'm going to go for a no prize here.
Okay.
They're doing some renovation at the police station, and just before Superman landed, a bag of cement fell over right underneath him, so he landed on that bag of cement, and that's the dust cloud that came out of it.
That the mayor's office was recently firebombed. So
they
could do, you know, we don't know that this story occurs before or after the Action Comics story, but we can presume now that it occurs after because of the firebombing. They are working on probably not just his office, probably that section of the building. And so as you indicated, that's what happened here. So I officially award you a Marvel No Prize, which we probably shouldn't do on a DC book because one or both of them will like burn up or something. But oh, and the smoke, it burn up? Yeah. Anyways. So Superman, it says, then off leaps the Man of Tomorrow once more. If I judge my mysterious foe correctly, he will have several crimes being pulled right now that ought to keep my hands full. Uh-oh. Down below, coming out of the jewelry store's back entrance. So he is on patrol, I guess, and he sees somebody exiting a jewelry store, a running thug. Maybe he can give me a clue as to Unknown X's identity. How does he know this is a thug? I don't see an armband.
It's there. You can see it in that third panel on the bottom, last panel. Barely see it.
Okay. Let me go. That's okay. Now, here he grabs the dude and flies away with him. Presumably, he's going to go maybe to the police station. But as he's flying, Superman flies close to an airplane and decides that he's going to use the airplane to threaten the guy for information. If you don't give me information, I'm going to do something. Something's going to happen. So first, he threatens that he's going to drop him in the prop of the plane if he doesn't give him information. So the dude talks, tells him that I can tell you that the Metropolis Trust Company is scheduled to be robbed this very minute. And so Superman takes the information, which this is kind of funny. He threatens to drop him in the propeller of the plane. And then when the man decides he's going to talk, he sets the man on top of the plane. And Superman sits on top of the plane just bent over, clutching his knees as a young boy would listening to a story.
Here is this morning's story. Are you ready? Then we'll begin.
Story time! Yay!
The man gives Superman the information. The next panel, Superman jets off and leaves dude on the top of this plane. Now, this also reminds me of like the Spirit of St. Louis plane, whatever style aircraft that was.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
A long time ago, in a comic book rack far, far away,
During the years between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Marvel Comics kept the Star Wars magic alive, delivering bold new stories, expanding the mythology, and taking our favorite heroes and villains on unforgettable adventures. Now join me, the irredeemable Shag, and an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we journey back to this incredible era. We begin with a comic adaptation of The Empire Strikes Back and continue through the thrilling tales leading up to Return of the Jedi. If you're a seasoned Star Wars veteran who knows your Shira Bree from your hoojibs, or a brave explorer venturing into these comics for the first time, this is your hyperspace lane to classic Star Wars adventure. Join us for Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi, every other month on the Fire & Water Podcast Network. Beginning in June 2025.
According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. So check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
Leaves him clinging to the plane. Hey, what about me? You can't leave me here. And Superman says, that's your problem.
That's your problem.
Wow.
Wow, what a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, an airplane, even an airplane with a propeller, they still got to go pretty fast.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
To stay aloft.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and you kind of see that by the way he's hanging onto the wing in that last panel, whereas the one before it, it didn't seem to be as big a deal.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So this is where obviously the artist is like, oh, Superman can actually fly, because there's no way they could try to pass this off as leaping.
No,
because he's
no.
Hovering, he's turning in midair. That's, he's
this
flying.
Is, this definitely. Is the flying pose that you would think to see.
Right, right. And I love how he's carrying the guy by the back of his collar, thrown over his shoulder like a freaking backpack or something.
Right, yeah. As he's flying.
He could slip out of his jacket at any point back there and just die.
Well, as long as he keeps his arms down, he'll be okay, unless the jacket tears.
Superman don't care.
No, he really doesn't. Superman's sensitive hearing picks up the sound of an explosion from the vicinity of the Metropolis Trust Company. So he chases that down, leaps into the, flies into the, okay, combination here. First, it looks like he's running in the flying panel here in the middle top. Then he jumps into the window, which is fine. The way that's drawn, it makes sense. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys here. Deliberately, the thugs unleash a hail of bullets toward the cowering employees. I guess the employee, looks to be the one wearing the vest. Well, no, actually, I guess it's two. The ones in this panel, you've got two men with hands up, three men who don't. So I guess the employees, obviously, are the hands up, and the thugs are the others. You see one dude with a Thompson submachine gun here. He's got an armband on. So he's an unknown ex-member, whatever you want to call him, getting ready to shoot at the employee that they're holding hostage. Superman jumps in front of him, blocks the bullets, says he's got to catch them all. He can't afford to miss a single one, meaning the bullets. Here's where you catch one right on the chin, and he punches the dude that's shooting. As he does that, one of the other thugs comes up behind him and hits him in the head and knocks him down, which...
Yeah, Superman starts getting his butt kicked here.
Yeah, I would think that's like punching a brick wall or something. Right. I don't know that I don't care how off balance Superman was. I don't know that a regular person could hit him hard enough to knock him down.
No, but that's very inconsistent here with that, with his power set at this point. Because, yeah, I'm just going to, again, I'm going to throw the no prize out there. I'm going to assume that Superman wasn't just off balance. He tripped and he was going down as the guy runs in and hits him. Like, I have knocked him down.
Okay, he could have tripped on the dude he just punched.
Yeah.
Because the forward momentum of the punch, and he tripped on the dude's feet as he was falling, and he's getting ready to fall down, and before he can catch himself or fly or whatever, the other dude jumps on him. He sees that, and yeah. So Superman's on the ground. He's punching one, punches another, grabs all three of them up and shoves them in the nearby vault. Looks like a safe to me.
Right.
Shoves them in there, takes the door where they have blown it off and it's all mangled and everything, and he re-bends it. He doesn't really fix it, but he bends the vault door to where now it fits onto the vault and so shuts in these three thugs until the police can arrive. He doesn't say so. There, that ought to hold you is all. One of them got away. Now, interesting, when you first see them, there are three of them and two employees. He just shut up three in the vault, and a fourth one is escaping on foot. So apparently somebody was off panel in the initial panel. And he's escaping, and then Superman says, you know, let me hang back a second and see where he runs, because hopefully he'll lead me to more of the men, or lead me to the leader, or, you know, lead me to something that will be useful in taking out this unknown X mob. So the dude runs into a drugstore, jumps into a phone booth in the drugstore, which we know at this time is where phone booths always are. Drugstores always have the phone booths that you can go to. Usually, you know, rows of three or four of them, each with their closing doors. So we saw that in the previous story in Action. A police officer chased Clark Kent into one, and Clark mysteriously wasn't in it. Must have had a false back door, back panel or something. So this unknown ex-assailant runs in and makes a call to Jameson, indicates he's Benji, and Benji is telling Jameson what's going on. And Superman overhears this and assumes now that this Jameson, who is head of the Citizens Committee, which was formed to battle the unknown X, must now be involved because this bad guy is calling him directly.
Yeah, I can only assume that Superman's also hearing Jameson's side of the conversation and recognizes the voice.
In that third panel, you see two balloons.
Yeah.
So,
because otherwise he's like, when I got to that second panel, you know, the first panel, he's like, "Hello, Jameson, this is Benji calling, listen." And Superman goes, "Jameson? Why, he's head of the Citizens Committee. There's a lot of people named Jameson. So why does he hear that name and immediately know who he is unless he can hear the guy's voice and
He just assumed and made a connection. I mean, he could.
Yeah, maybe.
You know.
That's too much of a coincidence.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Yeah. You're right. But we've got to move the story forward. So we'll go ahead and make that connection now rather than having to explain something. So.
Yeah, but you mentioned that I could see him now making that connection because in his head he'd be like, that's too much of a coincidence that this guy's calling someone named Jameson and the guy who's investigating as part of this. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There is a Jameson who is close to these people because, yeah.
Yeah.
So he listens in and then Superman decides that he's going to go over to Jameson's office. So he heads over there. Nobody in the office. He goes back to wherever, changes with the outer garments from beneath his cloak. There you are. You mentioned they call it a cloak. Superman puts on his Clark Kent duds. So he's going to go up and see if he can see Jameson as Clark Kent, even though he just tried as Superman and saw that Jameson wasn't there. So he goes up to the office, knocks on the door, and sure enough, Jameson is there now. Right? Didn't he say that? The empty room. Jameson must be out to lunch. Yeah, that's just weird. Superman looks in the office. He's not there. So he's like, well, I'll go visit him as Clark Kent. So he goes down, changes it into Clark, goes up, and Jameson is there.
back from lunch.
Okay, yeah. Moving the story along. It just. Clark Kent of the Daily Planet, Jameson recognizes. Clark immediately launches in. Through another source, I've learned that some of the unknown X's men are in touch with you. Why? Jameson says, I've pretended to cooperate with them just to draw them into a trap. So Clark then takes that information and, you know, whatever other information he feels that he has, talks to Sergeant Casey. And is this Jameson here that's with him? I don't know. There's a guy in a brown suit. Jameson was wearing a brown suit. I wonder if he took Jameson to the police station. I don't know. That's weird.
No, I think it's just some dude.
In a brown suit also.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. They only had so many colors they could work with. So, I mean,
yeah,
you couldn't make it a green suit or a black suit. You had to make it a brown suit like Jameson. Yeah. So he tells Casey that he thinks Jameson is mixed up in this somehow. And Casey asks him, well, you know, how, why? And he pulls the reporter privilege and he's like, I just know, or, you know, that kind of thing. So Clark heads back to the Daily Planet, runs into Lois. While he's there, a phone call comes in and Jameson is calling. But yeah, that's weird. Okay. He just saw Jameson. So Jameson has received word that Unknown X is going to go after Clark because Clark is sniffing around them as a reporter. So he's warning him. Just says that he intends to wipe you both out. So I guess that's him and Lois of your program.
No, him. He says wipe
both of
us.
Okay, so it's Jameson and Clark. So Clark is getting too close, and Agent X or Unknown X is going to kill them both because Jameson is, I don't know, and Clark is getting too close to finding stuff out. He says that unless I skip town, I'm a dead herring, Clark tells Lois. Whoa. She grabs up the phone from him and says, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, letting fear drive you from the purpose you swore to follow to the finish.
Lois kicks ass.
Yeah, what did he swear to? He's just a citizen's committee representative. What did he swear to follow?
To find out and stop Unknown X. That's why the citizen's committee was formed.
He swore to follow. Okay. And Jameson is like, look, my neck means more to me than my principles. I'm clearing out. And if your boyfriend's smart, he'll do the same. So there you go, dude. He's like, yeah, no. My principles are one thing, but my ass is something else.
Yeah.
Guess there's something in what Jameson says. My vacation is overdue. Perhaps I'd better take a trip. So Clark is already planning to do stuff as Superman, and he's using this as his excuse to not have Clark around for a little while.
And she just immediately pissed off at him.
If you do, I'll never speak to you again, you miserable weakling.
Which she was already pissed enough at him from the last action story from where he was police commissioner and all this stuff. So,
but Lois, be reasonable. What good would my friendship be to you if I were dead?
The point. He's got a point. What kind of friend would I be if I was dead?
Why be so stupid about it? Beat the Unknown X at his own game. Go to the rat hole where he hides and drags him out by his ears. By his ears? Me? Oh, you're hopeless. If you only knew how much you exasperate me, Clark Kent. But all I said was...
And she's marching out as he's saying this. So she leaves, slams the door hard enough that she breaks the glass in the door. Which is just kind of funny out of nowhere. So now Clark changes to Soup, jumps out the window, which later. Okay, I was going to say, I didn't know the Daily Planet was on the waterfront. But he flies to the waterfront and jumps in the ocean. We have a couple panels of him swimming around looking for something. He spots a boat, which I don't know how he can tell that he has the right boat. Jameson's yacht ahead. I don't know how he can recognize a boat from underwater. I would think of them look pretty much the same. And in the third panel, when we see this boat, this doesn't look like what I would call a yacht to me.
It
looks like a much more workman kind of boat, a Navy boat maybe or something like that, but not a luxury yacht. So Superman finds it. He presumes that Jameson is on it trying to make a getaway. So he's using his yacht. Jameson and the captain find that the boat isn't responding the way that it should, because underwater, Superman is steering it, grabbing the rudder physically and directing the ship where it wants to go. So I would presume instead of heading out and away from the waterfront, he has steered the ship so it's going back to the waterfront, probably crashing into a wharf or something like that there, I would think. Captain says the ship's haunted, and just about this time Superman pops up, says possibly, and Jameson, is that actually Jameson? We're not told, but he's wearing a brown suit. Spooks nothing, he's to blame. So the dude heard the captain and saw Superman, so he's responding to the captain, responding to seeing Superman. Superman jumps up, the captain draws a gun, the gun doesn't do any good. This unknown ex thug, maybe it's Jameson, I don't know. He's got an armband. We do see that. It's not colored correctly, but it's on there. Jumps outside and jumps to a harpoon gun on the fore of the ship, right? Fore, the front. And aims it at Superman. Superman tells him, well, you go ahead. And I didn't know this is how you fire harpoon guns, but he pulls a cord on it like you do a top. Rips a line on a top, kind of thing. That's what it, yeah. So we don't see it, unfortunately, because that would have been really cool to see it bounce off of Superman. But Superman says it did. Then while he's talking to the dude, a guy from over here throws a steel cable around him, trying to snag him up like all the bad guys seem to do to Wonder Woman during World War II. Whenever they try to capture Wonder Woman, they're always tying her up, which, for those of you that are Wonder Woman fans, understand with Marston and his fascination with women and bondage. And yeah, she gets tied up in almost every story that I've read. So they try to tie Superman up, but it says the Man of Steel is snagged by the cable. Easily, he snaps the cable. It hurtles back hard enough that it throws the guy off the boat that threw the cable around him. I would almost envision it like maybe some kind of lasso or something, although tying a lasso out of a cable would be quite a thing to do for a regular person. So I don't know what they did, but he did it. The bad guy did. The reverb from where Superman broke the cable knocks him off. Superman dives into the water, grabs the guy, and as he's flying up and out of the water, the man is rendered unconscious. The speed, or maybe holding his breath, or maybe he was knocked unconscious from the back blow of the cable itself. I don't know, but he's knocked out when Superman jumps him out of the water, and I presume just sets him down on the deck somewhere, uses his X-ray vision. Superman does, not the unconscious dude, of course. Superman starts looking around with his X-ray vision in different parts of the ship, looking for Jameson again, I would presume. He's now a reconnoiter, Superman says. So he's looking, I guess, for Jameson, because that's who he wants to catch to begin with. So I guess that means that the thug that was in the captain's cabin at the beginning was not Jameson. Otherwise, Superman would have known where he was. So he's looking around, sees this dude tied up, more people tied up. His bondage fetish is just, he's wearing a green suit, so they could have used green in other places instead of everybody having a brown suit. Tied up, green suit, Superman breaks into the cabin there where he is, breaks his bonds, tied behind his back, almost like, you know, handcuffs or something like that. And it turns out to be, out of the blue, Russell Walker.
Yeah.
We've never heard of Russell Walker. We don't know who that is.
Yeah, I hate it when they treat it like it's a surprise reveal, when we've never met this guy before. Mm-mm. So,
Russell Walker, one of the wealthiest men in Metropolis. Thank you for saving my life. And now Jameson shows up. So you're the unknown X. Why does he think that?
I don't know.
What is that in his hand?
It's a gun.
No. In Superman's hand in the middle panel.
That's a good question. Let me blow this up.
Looks like he almost snatched a mask or something off of the dude's head or something. I mean, because he just untied the dude.
Oh, it's his hat.
Oh, he snatched his hat. Oh, so maybe that was him that was in the captain's cabin. Because that dude had a fedora on. Okay.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Do you love podcasting but hate editing? Do you have a number of episodes recorded but just can't find the time to get them edited and ready for release? Do you need help and you're not sure what to do? Well, come talk to me. My name is Stephen Orr. I have over a decade of experience recording and editing my own podcasts, and I want to put those skills to work for you. I can remove that background noise. I can reduce silences. I'll remove all of your ums and your uhs, as well as your throat clearings, sneezes and coughs and such. And I can even add your music and whatnot. And hey, my prices are quite reasonable. Check out edityourpod.com to get started. That's edityourpod.com. Or just reach out to me directly. Email edityourpod@gmail.com. Tell me what you need, and I'll tell you how I can help. And more importantly, quote you a cost. Edityourpod.com. Get started today. Step into the savage world of the Hyborian Age and journey through a land of sorcery, steel, and epic adventure with me, Stephen Orr, on Hither Came Conan. Together, we'll explore the legendary Conan the Barbarian comic series from Marvel Comics, starting with the groundbreaking first issue from 1970 and working our way through each epic tale, one issue at a time. Along the way, I'll also dive into any other Conan comics I can get my hands on. Because when it comes to the titular Cimmerian, there's no such thing as too much adventure. Whether you're a diehard Conan fan or just discovering the greatest barbarian of all time, this podcast is your gateway to the blood-soaked battlefields, treacherous kingdoms, and forgotten treasures of Robert E. Howard's timeless creation. New episodes are packed with action, insights, and a little humor, all dedicated to the world of Conan and the creators who brought him to life on the comic book page. So sharpen your swords and subscribe to Hither Came Conan today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Crom demands it.
Into the boat.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
Jameson, so you're the unknown X. I still don't understand how he made that connection, but Jameson had his gun because Jameson is holding a pistol on him. Is that why he assumes? And although he snatches his hat and Jameson doesn't shoot him with the gun. Yeah, I don't know. And something just now occurred to me. I meant to mention back in the scene where Superman jumps through the window to the. Was it the place, was it a jeweler's place that had the vault that the men had blown open? I believe they called out Superman when he came in. Here. Do they say Superman here?
Yeah, right there. Yeah. Superman.
That's one of the first times that he is recognized as being Superman by other people, not us. Or not by the narrator saying it.
Well, these bad guys, they had that, the story where Lois is conned by the talent agency guy.
Right.
And I think Superman goes into the dressing room and all the ladies are like, Superman.
And we have seen him referenced to Superman in the papers every now and then. It's not very often that he has been referred to by third parties as Superman yet.
Yep. Yeah.
So he confronts Jameson, grabs the gun out of his hand, breaks it, throws it out or whatever. And then here we have the story. You know, you always have to have the story, although a lot of times it's told by the bad guy, like in the middle of the book when nothing is really prompting them to tell us, of course, the reading audience, what the story was. And so this is the story of why Jameson, as the unknown X, kidnapped Russell Walker. I was going to refer to it by the whiskey's name, Walker. But yeah, this is Russell Walker, who's in Metropolis, not in Kentucky. Like, what is the whiskey? Johnny Walker? Is that what the whiskey is called?
Johnny Walker.
Yeah, no, this is Russell. Speak up. Why did you kidnap Walker? You're so smart. You figure it out, says Jameson. And so Superman's like, okay, I will. Only one solution. You planned in some way to murder Walker and frame the identity of the unknown X upon him. You chose him because he's been known to refuse cooperation with your committee. And Walker raises his fist like the old man on the lawn and says, you dastardly, or a dastardly scheme.
A dastard, yeah.
He's shaking his fist at him.
You guessed it. Evidently, you've not only got super strength, but super intuition,
Jameson says.
Not intuition, Jameson. I happen to understand the depths of the criminal mind, and none could occupy a lower plane than yours.
Superman Burn. With the insult, yeah.
Walker, I'm going to leave Jameson in your hands. Think you can handle him? The captain of this yacht is an honest man and will set back for sure when he learns who his employer really is.
I thought Superman had already turned the boat back towards shore, but okay. Walker, I can take care of him, but be careful. They don't make them any more treacherous. He won't get away with anything, and of course, in the next panel, Jameson gets away with something.
Yeah.
He gets the same pistol that Superman got, or he had another pistol on him.
He had another gun hidden on him.
Grabs up Walker, basically from behind with the pistol to the back of his head. He perp marches Walker and Superman out of the cabin onto the deck of the ship because Superman, I guess, it's too close. Superman's afraid to try to do anything. So he's telling Walker... Jameson is telling Walker at gunpoint to jump off the ship. And as a matter of fact, Superman, you can do the same thing. So he's telling the men under gunpoint that they can take a flying leap. And Superman does. He takes a flying leap and he does a somersault and comes back at Jameson and punches him in the head, slamming his head into the bulwark, forcing him to drop the gun. The punch killed him.
He's dead. His
head on the ship killed him. Something killed Jameson here. He's got to be. Yeah. So Superman leaves. Walker exclaims as Superman is leaving, how can I ever reward you? Superman says, and this is Superman throwing this basically over his shoulder, this statement over his shoulder. As he's going away, he doesn't turn and talk to him or anything. He's intent on leaving. Superman says this as an afterthought. I'm not asking for any reward, and you'd better go forward and explain the circumstances to the captain. It just struck me as kind of a weird thing to say in this situation. And in the office, once again, Perry, Lois, Clark. Clark is giving the story. Perry is thanking him or congratulating him on the scoop. And Superman says, well, actually, it wasn't just me. You know, if it hadn't been for Superman, I wouldn't have known, which is like, duh. I wouldn't have known most of what occurred. And it's like, well, yeah, it basically is because of Superman, because you are Superman. So it's, yeah, okay. And so there we go. All tied up in a nice, nifty little bow there. So what you got?
Well, I thought this, maybe it was the other one. I thought this one was the one that had three different occasions in which Superman says, hey. But it might have been the previous one.
Yeah, I believe it was the previous one. I was going to mention that. Yeah. It came to mind when I saw it, when I was reading it. And I forgot to mention it. That's one of your favorite affectations of the bad guys.
Yeah. This was another fun one. I didn't like it as much as Action Comics 37, which we read both of them for this live stream. The whole style of it was a bit lighter.
It seemed more, and I didn't pay any attention. I don't know what the page count was, but it seemed more stretched out, or not stretched, but it seemed more laid out linearly.
Yeah.
Whereas that first one seemed like a lot of stuff was put into it. Whereas this one had a little bit more room to breathe from, panel to panel, from part of story to part of story. It was, in a way, it was a little easier for me to follow because basically there was just one dude, right?
Yep.
Once he got a name, that was Jameson. In the Action Comics story, the dude to follow was the police commissioner because he kept getting killed and dying off. And then there was somebody, of course, who was in charge of all the badliness, come to find out. But this one, there was one person that we were trying to find, then we got a name and we could just follow the name through the rest of the story. So it seemed smoother, I guess. This story seemed a little bit smoother than the Action Comics story that was very broken. New commissioner, dead. New commissioner, dead. New commissioner, dead, you know. Whereas this one, it's like something is happening. Let's do the investigation. Oh, well, this dude is a suspect. Let's follow this dude, you know. So it's, although they were both written by the same guy, right?
And they were both drawn by Paul Cassidy.
And they were probably they were published close to each other. So they were probably created relatively close to each other as well. So, it seemed that for whatever reason, what they wanted to do, if the artist was heavily involved, or what he wanted to do, if it was just the writer of the story, was very different between the two stories, or he was in two very different states of mind when he created them or something. It almost feels like it was two, which I guess it could have been, two different creators. I mean, we know at this time, I just read an article about a woman. I forget her last name was Noto. I forget her first name.
Red Sonja Ryder.
Yes, very good. She was probably the one responsible for the first 15 to 20 of the Red Sonja stories, and not Roy Thomas. He took the credit that was not due. So I had no idea about all that. And I'm like, and I know, you know, that stuff like that was done a lot to get more money. But then a lot of these creators found out that they needed actual help to do all the work. So they would enlist somebody and pay them under the table, or they would help them as a favor or whatever. Maybe these two stories being back to back, maybe there was some ghostwriting done for one or the other. And that's why they feel different, which is actually the point I'm getting to. But they do feel, well, I think, pretty different.
Being not as packed full of stuff, the art itself, not as many lines, you know, used on the page. So the combination of the story not being as packed and the art not being as, it just feels very open and breezy compared to the other one, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you only have a few minutes. So any final thoughts about the story?
Not really any final thoughts. I like getting back to this style of writing that was employed during the Golden Age. One other exception. Other than reading for Golden Age Superman, I am reading Golden Age Wonder Woman as a read-along following with a podcast that I recently found that is going through her stories that appeared in the actual Wonder Woman comic. So I am reading those. Those are the only two Golden Age things. Everything else that I read is either some of my favorite stuff, which is in the late 70s, early to mid 80s, or contemporary stuff, if that's what I'm reading. So it's always refreshing, palate cleansing, and kind of educational, but in the sense of seeing what it was and being able to compare it to what it is.
Yeah.
And so I like these tastes of the Golden Age stuff. Now, I'll be honest, I still cannot sit down and read 4, 5, 6 Golden Age stories back to back. They wear me out. But, you know, I can do that with, like, say, a contemporary book. I can sit down and munch on 8, 10, 12, 22-page contemporary stories just. And then 3 hours later, I'm like, oh, shit, I've been sitting here. You know, I don't know why. But these Golden Age stories, after 2 or 3, I'm like,
they're exhausting.
I need to take a break. So it's like, you know, it's like your favorite food. You like to eat it, but it is, even though it's your favorite, you can get to the point where you have too much of it and you're like, I don't want any more, even though it's my favorite. The Golden Age stories are like that for me. 2 or 3 of them, and I'm like, I need a break. I find that even with, although they, of course they aren't Golden Age, but when I go back and read the early Silver Age stories for Marvel from the beginning, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, things like that, I can only read a couple, 3 of those before
they're
I'm
just,
like,
they can be pretty dense is the thing. There's just
I guess
lot
that's what it is. To, yeah. It's, yeah, I guess it's the contemporary books, even the serious ones, are just easier reads than, yep. you know, for instance, this action book with the dude dead. You're not going to read anything like that now. There'll be one person yep. will die, and then they'll just use that as the through fair for the rest of the story. But yeah, it just, yep. but yeah, these stories, plus too, I think maybe part of it is like a lot of the questions and inconsistencies that I'll have come to mind as I'm reading these Golden Age stories. And over the course of a whole story, there's a whole bunch of those things that are in my head that I'm having to pack down to keep reading until finally I get to the point like, I can't ask any more questions. Yeah. You put
all that together, and it's exhausting reading too many of these in a row.
In a row, yeah. Now, you know, a couple today, couple hours, you know, couple tomorrow. I can keep reading them, but yeah, in one sitting, more than two or three, and I'm just like, okay, I need a break. And these two were pretty much like that. I had some more time this morning. I could have read some other stuff after these two stories, but I'm like, nah, I need to not read anything and just try to sort some of these things out in my head so they don't seem maybe as goofy as, you know, so to, let it settle for a minute. So, yeah.
All right. I don't know that I have anything else to add other than to just say that I did enjoy both of the stories that we read for the live stream. So I did enjoy this Unknown X. But it does seem like with the past four stories for the show so far, Golden Age, it's been spies and just your basic racketeering mob thug type things. And
yes.
And I'm ready for them to make just another shift at some point. You know, we need to get back to some Luther and some characters like that.
Well, you know, we both know that Superman has this huge rogues gallery. And as we're going through this, I'm thinking, so his rogues gallery has only been like since the Silver Age up. I mean, he doesn't, you know, because now, understandably, 1941, Europe, Japan, Germany, Italy, World War II, there's a lot of stuff on their mind that they want to say. And so right now I could see that because here, within another year and a half, they will have one of the greatest supervillains ever created in real life to talk about all they want to in Hitler. Now, they don't know that that's coming up necessarily. Maybe they're starting to get a sense now. But so... Yeah, I guess they don't really need supervillains yet.
Yeah.
But it just...
But it is weird to think that we are 3 years into the first 3 years of Superman's publication. And yes they've introduced Luther.
Yes.
And the Ultra-Humanite, that's it.
Well, even the Ultra-Humanite isn't really going to stay a Superman villain.
That's true.
So really, Luther, who has always appeared as a villain... So, I mean, he is, other than that, yeah, it's like, you've got Perry and Lois and, you know, they'll be around, but no long-term, I want to use him again, bad guys.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
I'll have to start looking up, maybe I'll do that this afternoon, just start looking up his rogues and see
when they appeared. Yeah, so there has to be some from the Golden Age that carry through. Like Luther. Yeah. I mean, we obviously now know that one, he'll go through. But yeah, it's like we're, 88? So we've talked about 88 different stories and have one bad guy that we will see majorly again in the future. And that's been it so far.
Yeah, that's weird.
So I think it is. Yeah.
But yet at the same time, we get villains like the old man in the orphanage in the basement.
Oh, we get some good villains, yes. But they're obviously one-off because they're only,
That guy's not going to come back and pester Superman again. Doug!
Doug, what up?
Doug's in the house. What's up, Doug? In our next episode, Metropolis is rocked by a series of baffling robberies committed not by hardened crooks, but by a mailman, a bank manager, and even Lois Lane, each under the sway of a mysterious black radio's hypnotic command. Superman must trace the signal to the twisted psychologist behind it all, resist a mind-bending attack of his own, and flip the hypnosis back on the villain to secure a confession and save the city. That's next time on episode number 89, when Ed and I are going to look at Radio Control, the Superman story from Action Comics number 48, published in May of 1941. So, yeah, until then, folks, thank you for listening. I'm Steven. That's Ed. This was the Superman Super Show. Bye.
Ciao.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out somanypodcasts.com or use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Oh, but wait, there's Superman. He'll save us. Superman! Superman! Wait, where are you going? Oh, to hell with him. We'll have to deal with these marauders ourselves.